This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. See if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio. Is universal health coverage in America the way to finally liberate our country from the sway of religious dogma? Stay tuned to find out.
I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves.
Free Thought Radio is devoted to the views of America's undevotional population.
And by the way, that population of the country is the fastest growing segment by religious identification. At least 15% of adult Americans identify themselves as non-religious. And that percentage is even much higher in the teenage to the 20s bracket.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which I helped to co-found back in, this dates me, 1976, when I was a college student. We've grown from 3 initial members to 14,000 members nationwide in every state. And we work to promote non-theism. Our members are atheists, agnostics, skeptics, and so on. And we work to keep religion free, government free from religion, as is required by our Constitution.
Coming up in today's show, we will interview a very interesting guy, Gregory S. Paul. He's an independent researcher who has looked at the difference between largely non-religious European nations and the devoutly religious United States. And he points the finger at income inequality. Our country, the United States, lacks the safety network of universal health care. Everyone is one job loss away from no care and potential financial ruin compared to countries such as Denmark, England, France, Holland, etc. When countries inaugurate basic social services for all, including universal health care, we see the power of religion wane.
So is universal health care Free Thought's secret weapon? Maybe that's why the religious right in our country is so hostile to the idea of health care for all as an American right.
But before that interview, we have lots to report on the Free Thought activism front since our show last week.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation has placed its first billboard in Indiana with our Leninesque saying, "Imagine no religion." And we thank the Indiana Foundation member who generously paid for that. He originally wanted us to put a billboard up in Bloomington, the liberal college town, and we were censored by the billboard companies there. So we had to look to Indianapolis. And if you're passing through or you know folks there, tell them there's a 14 by 48 footer at Keystone Avenue North near 52nd Street in Indianapolis, and it's making waves.
And the 14 by 48 is the big size. And how long will that be up?
A month.
Up for a month. And a reminder to all you listeners in San Francisco City and County, keep a watch out for 75 buses bearing Freedom From Religion Foundation slogans on the outside. One of them says, "Imagine no religion." And another one quotes Mark Twain saying, "Faith is believing what you know ain't so." Plus, we have 200 interior bus cards up in those buses.
And they're very beautiful. They feature 5 historic freethinkers, Clarence Darrow among them, with portraits and quotations, plus contemporary atheist Richard Dawkins. And I can't decide on my favorite, but I really do love the poem that we feature with Emily Dickinson. We have her portrait and her 4-line poem. "Faith is a fine invention when gentlemen can see, but microscopes are prudent in an emergency."
So we're going after faith on the side of buses, aren't we? And inside of buses, too. So you can help support mass transit in San Francisco. Ride the buses and look for our signs. This is a first for that city.
And we'll have more billboards going up in Detroit and Las Vegas. We'll talk about those in October.
Speaking of billboards, we have an update on the lawsuit that the Freedom From Religion Foundation filed late last year in federal court in the Los Angeles area over the censorship of our Imagine No Religion billboard by the city of Rancho Cucamonga. Annie Laurie, you've been following the case more closely than I am. What's the recent developments here?
Well, we have filed proof, we think, documentation that the city intentionally called the billboard company. They used to get the sign down. They admitted that they had an employee named Donna Vega who was directed to contact the billboard company to say people were unhappy about it. And they asked her to do it specifically because she was in charge of negotiating a deal that was lucrative for the billboard company. They wanted to expand some billboard spots. And so the day after they got the call from the city, the billboard company took the sign down. And not only did an employee there say that they wanted the sign to go down when they contacted the billboard company, but it was at the advice of the city attorney. So it's kind of a smoking gun. We'll see. The depositions are in, and we're asking for a trial.
And again, what is that inflammatory message on that sign?
Imagine no religion. So now let's talk about some of the other actions of the foundation. And we've been taking about 20 complaints about illegal prayer going on in city halls and councils. And we are stirring things up in a community near Bakersfield, Wisconsin. And how do you say that, Dan?
The city is called Tehachapi.
And I keep mispronouncing it. And I got called a Wisconsin cheesehead for mispronouncing it. There was a columnist.
What did you call it?
I don't want to say. Tehachapi. And there was a columnist in the Stockton Record who wrote a column in support of our complaint, but he was making fun of me. So we do have a news clip about what's going on in Tehachapi.
This is from KERO TV News in Bakersfield, which this segment aired on September the 8th.
Tonight's city council meeting starts with the Pledge of Allegiance. But unlike meetings over the last 6 months, there was no prayer. Part of the reason why, this letter by the Wisconsin-based Freedom from Religion Foundation on behalf of a concerned citizen, which says, quote, the current practice of offering invocations during city council meetings violates the First Amendment to the Constitution and California state law. The council must take immediate action to stop this illegal practice.
I recommended to Phil, who's sitting as mayor tonight, that we not have a prayer until the full council has had the ability to meet on this tonight in closed session and give some direction.
Well, the council discussed the letter in closed session. The public spoke out in favor of the prayer during public comment.
I feel that my rights are being violated as a Christian. That someone has said that no one can public anymore.
Our Constitution says we have freedom of religion. It does not say we have freedom from religion.
The foundation's letter cites numerous Supreme Court cases that say invocations are okay as long as all references to Christ are removed, a phrase that is found in all invocations dating back to March.
But I think what needs to be looked at is the manner of the invocation so that it's more inclusive.
Well, the council looks at its options. One council member wants the public to look into the group.
They're making schools not allowed to give scholarships to other religious colleges. So this is the type of group that we're dealing with. I encourage everybody to look at their site and see what we're dealing with.
This is sort of ridiculous. I have no idea what that council member was talking about, the scholarships. I mean, the foundation does give out scholarships to high school students. Maybe that's what he doesn't like. But it's really been getting enormous press coverage, TV stations, and lots of print coverage. And things aren't going so well there. If you're living in the area, you need to write the city council and the local papers. They're talking about putting up a big In God We Trust sign. And not stopping the prayer. So we need a little backup support from people in the
area.
And
how can we get some support from people?
Well, you can go to our Action Alert under outreach. You can go to our news releases if you're a member of the foundation.
On our webpage.
Yeah, that helps. And you can sign up to get all of this information. And if you're in the area, we'll send you a notice about legal problems in your area.
And the webpage is?
FFRF.org.
We'll be back to talk about some more censorship of non-religion in America. Religious provincialism that's squelching not only our billboards, but resulting in the fact that no one in America so far is willing to distribute a new BBC film called Creation about what Charles Darwin called his struggle between faith and reason, as he wrote in the book On the Origin of Species. It depicts him losing faith in a God after the tragic death of his beloved daughter. Her name was Annie. She was only 10 years old, so stay tuned.
My name's Ed Clayton from Chicago, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Hey If you don't believe in God, or if you have a problem with organized religion, there is a new radio show just for you called Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. In a few minutes, we'll talk with researcher Gregory Paul about why the lack of health care and why the economic inequality in our nation is keeping Americans in thrall to religious dogma. Would universal health care overthrow Americans' unhealthy dependence on religion? Find out in the second half of Free Thought Radio.
If you're reading only U.S. press, you may not know about a great new film about Darwin.
The new film is called Creation. It stars Paul Bettany as Darwin and his self-described struggle between faith and reason, which are words that he wrote in the book On the Origin of the Species.
And so far, while this film has been picked up to show in movie houses around the world, it even opened the Toronto Film Festival. It premiered last week in Great Britain. It's being blacklisted by American distributors as too hot to handle.
Too hot to handle. That's unbelievable.
And you might remember Paul Bettany, who's playing Darwin, played that creepy, very stereotyped albino religious fanatic in the movie The Da Vinci Code.
Oh, yeah.
He looks the part and from what we've seen, and he plays the august scientist Charles Darwin. Bettany's real-life wife, who's the actress Jennifer Connelly, plays Darwin's religious wife, Emma.
So let's listen to some of the trailer that you will not be seeing as previews in United States theaters.
Mr. Darwin, sir, it is time to write your book.
My title will be On the Origin of Species.
All of nature is a battlefield. Remind me where I read that.
Clear evidence of transformation over millions of years. The Almighty can no longer claim to have authored every species in under a week. You've killed God, sir.
I implore you, please do not push him.
No one can push Charles.
I'm a scientist. I dare not study for the fear of seeing more clear. It is already as plain as day.
What are you so scared of? It's only a theory.
It changes everything. Suppose the whole world stopped believing that God had any sort of plan for us. Apart from anything else, it would break your mother's heart.
I think you're at war with Charles. You both know it is a battle you can win.
I'll bet that half the nation would cheerfully see you burned at the stake if they knew what you were writing, but you have friends too, and all of us are fighting the same battle.
Do you not care that you and I may be separated for all eternity?
I've finished. You decide.
And this is a trailer for a new BBC movie about Darwin called Creation. And the London Telegraph ran a story on September 11th saying that distributors in our country, in the United States, are afraid to pick up the movie Creation, in part because of a Gallup poll conducted in February, finding 39% of Americans believe in the theory of evolution.
And I find that Gallup always shows Americans to be more religious than the other poll takers, but we do typically see the figure that 50%, half of adult Americans embrace creationism. And this is a very despicable kind of statistic about our country. It's a dangerous statistic.
Well, then we need a movie like that to be shown here. Jeremy Thomas, the Oscar-winning producer of Creation, said he was astonished that such attitudes exist 150 years after On the Origin of Species was published.
Which is this fall. The 150th anniversary comes this fall.
Thomas has said, people have been saying this is the best film they've seen all year. Yet nobody in the U.S. has picked it up. He also said, it's unbelievable to us that this is still a really hot potato in America. There's still a great belief that he made the world in 6 days. It's quite difficult for we in the U.K. to imagine religion in America. We live in a country which is no longer so religious, but in the U.S., outside of New York and L.A., religion rules. Charles Darwin is, I suppose, the hero of the film, but we tried to make the film in a very even-handed way. Darwin wasn't saying, kill all religion. He never said such a thing, but he is a totem for people. The movie was developed by BBC Films and the UK Film Council. It's based on the book Annie's Box, written by Darwin's great-great-grandson, Randall Keynes, and portrays the naturalist as a family man tormented by the death in 1851 of his favorite child, Annie. Early reviews raved about the film. The Hollywood Reporter said, "It'd be a great shame if those with religious convictions spurned the film out of hand, as they will find it even-handed and wise." Mr. Thomas, whose previous films include The Last Emperor, said he hoped the reviews would help to secure a U.S. distributor.
And as Richard Dawkins has put it about the evolution debate, one side or the other has got to be wrong, and not just slightly wrong, but catastrophically, ignominiously, disastrously wrong.
Do we have time to read some of Darwin's views
himself?
Here's something that Darwin wrote in his autobiography. "I can indeed hardly see how anyone ought to wish Christianity to be true. For if so, the plain language of the text seems to show that the men who do not believe, and this would include my father, my brother, and almost all my best friends, will be everlastingly punished. And this is a damnable doctrine."
And of course, he was born 200 years ago, February 12th, 1809. And at the time that he had written the monumental On the Origin of Species, he was still kind of accepting the first clause argument, but he gradually threw off
first cause,
and he gradually threw off all his religious beliefs. He said, "For my part, I would as soon be descended from a baboon as from a savage who delights to torture his enemies, treats his wives like slaves, and is haunted by the grossest superstitions."
In The Descent of Man, he wrote, "The assumed instinctive belief in God has been used by many persons as an argument for his existence, but this is a rash argument, as we should thus be compelled to believe in the existence of many cruel and malignant spirits, only a little more powerful than man, for the belief in them is far more general than in a beneficent deity." Darwin wrote to the Reverend Fordyce on July 7, 1879, that "an agnostic would be the most correct description of my state of mind." Now, if you want to help find distributors for the movie in the United States, go to our webpage and go to our action alerts at ffrf.org.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Coming up on the second half of Free Thought Radio, we'll be talking about how the lack of health care in our country keeps Americans religious.
Your eyes have seen a blurry scene that's only known to man. Your optic nerves are backward and have been since time began. That's what the preachers tell you is God's very special plan. Intelligent design.
I'm Michael Newdow, and this is Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. There are a lot of reasons, good reasons, I think, to support universal health care, and I'm personally very sorry to see the debate in this country so unambitious. But there is a very interesting side effect to universal health care coverage, and you may not be aware of it, and that is its role in diminishing religion's stronghold on individuals and nations. And we're going to talk about that with our guest today, Gregory S. Paul from Baltimore.
We have him on the phone today. Gregory S. Paul is an independent researcher who uses statistics and other types of analysis to test and solve many of the basic claims of religion and to study its interaction with science, society, economics, and politics. Now, he tells us he recently had some articles in he had an article on evolutionary psychology. USA Today and Newsweek recently ran stories which discusses Gregory Paul's work. And an article he wrote for Free Inquiry, which came out earlier this year, well, December 2008, January 2009. The article is called "The Big Religion Questions Finally Solved." And that article caught our eye because of this timely debate over health care. Let me just read the opening paragraph of that article in Free Inquiry before we welcome Gregory to the show. He writes, "Advanced sociological research has determined that dysfunctional socioeconomic factors are responsible for the origin and historical popularity of religious faith, and that science, secure prosperity, and consumerism are radically undermining faith all across the first world. In other words, when people feel secure because they have health coverage, they can't lose. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Gregory Paul.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good to have you. You're calling us from Baltimore.
Yes.
Well, your name is all over the place on this issue. And so
do you agree with kind of our summation that when people have a security net that they don't feel that they need, you know, a pie in the sky?
That's basically what's going on. You know, we do have a really fascinating situation going on in the country right now. These town halls, you have theoconservatives, most of them just ordinary people who are conservative Christians, denouncing those who dare advocate universal health care as being in danger of going to hell. I mean, this has been happening. You know, some of these people have been saying that, you know, denouncing them for being against God and that sort of thing. So there's a question here of why is this going on? Why is the religious right so against universal health care?
Well, and maybe they know, gee, this is going to be the unraveling of religion in this country, or they just are mean.
This is something that's almost certainly going on. And the reason we basically know this is that the United States, among first world nations, is the most religious. No other first world nation has as high rates of belief in God church-going attendance, except Ireland, actually, church-going is fairly high, too, but they don't believe in God at the same rates.
And even they are a much less wealthy country than the United States.
Well, their per capita, actually, Irish per capita incomes are about as high as the United States until recently, until this bubble that came in. I mean, the collapse of the bubble.
But they were traditionally much poorer than our country.
Yeah.
So you can give them a little more leeway.
In the United States, about 80% of people still believe in God. Only 20% are skeptics of God, which is a lot higher than most people think, by the way. In France, for example, about two-thirds of the population are atheists and agnostics, according to a Harris poll. The data from Scandinavia indicates the same thing. There's just no other first world nation that is still as religious as the United States.
And England is also up there with secular population, isn't it?
Yeah, all of them. Pew, just a couple of years ago, found that only about half of Americans absolutely believe in a personal God. The belief rates in this country aren't 90% as sometimes you hear, but for absolute belief in personal God, it's only about half, which is probably much lower than it was, say, in 1900. And Gallup has been asking the classic, do you believe in God or a universal spirit question since World War II? That shows a tripling of non-theists, atheists and agnostics, since the 1960s. And there are a bunch of other polls that show the non-religious are rising quite rapidly, probably to somewhere around 20% now.
But still, we don't have universal health care. So what's the correlation?
Well, we can get to that later as to why the United States is becoming less religious. But why the United States is still the most religious nation is because we have the most dysfunctional socioeconomic system in the first world. This is a country where if you're a middle-class person living, you know, a very comfortable lifestyle, you have the McMansion, the SUVs, the nice vacations and all this, nice health care coverage from your employer, what happens if the breadwinner suddenly loses their job for no fault of their own? You know, they're doing a good job, but they just get laid off for some reason. The company is suffering for some reason or they're downsizing. Well, there goes the health care. Somebody in the family becomes seriously ill. The cost could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. This leads to bankruptcies at tremendous rates in this country. I think about a million bankruptcies a year involve these overwhelming health care bills. So Americans live on the edge constantly.
So religion is a response to stress, basically, then.
It's basically, and this is not, the sociological data shows this, but this is also pretty well known. Even the Bible talks about how prosperity, about wealth, contributes to non-spirituality. They warn against this. And the converse, that when people are stressed and anxious, they become more religious. Go to Canada. Go to Europe. Nobody goes bankrupt ever because of health care bills. Job security is much higher. So you have middle-class majorities that live very prosperous, secure lives with high degrees of security. And what this means is that it comes to Sunday morning, and people in Canada or Switzerland or Australia, they got a choice. Are they going to go to church to try to seek the aid and protection of gods like Americans do? Or are they going to go for a hike with the family or do something else? That's basically what's happening. They're making a subtle, they're not really thinking about it, choice. They're making a lifestyle choice that we don't have to seek the aid and protection of God. They just don't feel that in their gut.
So religion is taking a hike.
Basically.
And it's not because some activist atheist groups are out there proselytizing
them. Never been a culture war in Europe over this. Not a major culture war. Think about it. Since World War II, if you look at There's an excellent book called Sacred and Secular by Pippo Norris and Ronald Engelhart at Cambridge University Press a few years ago. Well, they show the plots of church attendance in Europe since World War II, and it nosedived. But this was not, and this is, you know, the churches were saying, you know, particularly the Catholic Church was still saying you should be Christian, but it just didn't work, and it wasn't this big battle. It's all been very organic, very casual. And this, the reality, you know, there's still some people who are arguing. Templeton Organization, and I think Oxford are putting together this big $2.5 million project to figure out why religion exists. Well, I've already figured this out.
They should give you the $2 million.
The money, but
the Templeton Prize.
Religion is universal. This is still very commonly said.
Mm-hmm.
But the Europeans and Canadians show this is not true. You can have high rates of non-religion.
Well, I always think this is true.
And this also means that religion, for most people, is casual and superficial. It is not deeply inset. It is not genetically pre-programmed. There's been a lot of arguments why religion started. Those are not the reasons. But atheism also, in most people, when they become atheistic, is also usually casual. So this is not a war of ideology, a struggle between Teutonic forces of ideas. Basically, if people are doing pretty good, they give up religion.
So what happened in Europe was a basic sort of accidental or organic thing that wasn't designed. And isn't that starting to happen on these shores as well?
Well, there's another factor. I have what's called the triple threat to Western faith. And one is modern science, because modern science has really done a major number on religion. I know a lot of people. This USA Today article discusses Francis Collins, who's an evangelical scientist who says science and religion are compatible. The same one that talks about my research, but he's really wrong. Science, and we can't talk about it here, we don't have time, but science really harms religion. It shows that you don't need a God to explain things, and it kind of encourages non-religiosity. That's one of the threats. The other threat is secure economic, socioeconomic environment. That's a big threat. But the other one is really fascinating, and that's the corporate consumer culture that we live in.
Which we have. I mean, we have a corporate consumer culture, but we still have religion
here. And I mean, this is a fascinating thing that people haven't really been looking at. You know, you go to the Bible. The Bible, the New Testament, is communistic. The first Christian community in Acts in Jerusalem is described as so communistic that when a married couple refuses to turn over all the property to the church, God strikes them dead.
Ananias and Sapphira, yeah.
And so William Jennings Bryan, who was a democratic populist who railed against the corporations, and he was a creationist, a fundamentalist Christian, and a creationist. He had this kind of strange combination you don't see today in politics. But he knew the corporations were a danger to religion. In the United States, you had this flip over starting in the 20th century with Amy McPherson and Prosperity of Christianity. This new idea came in that, well, America is a capitalist society, we're God-blessed. Obviously, God is a capitalist. And it's got tied in with becoming prosperous, that if you're a good Christian, you become wealthy. And you also had the strange thing of William F. Buckley, who's a Catholic, and the Catholic Church still condemns capitalism. They just encyclical came out doing this. He allied the religious right with the corporations and the Republican Party. Seems like a good idea, this powerful Republican Party, and there was this plan they had to take over the country. There have been allegations the corporations wanted to turn the United States into a corporate theocracy. But that's not true. The corporations, their bottom line is money, and they want to turn Americans into hedonist consumers.
So what you're saying is that it's backfiring on them, basically. They made a bad choice.
What my research shows in the Evolutionary Psychology paper in particular, which is an online paper, you can go right to it. Just go to the journal.
We have to take a break here, Greg.
Well, and when we get back, we're going to go back onto this topic of, I think, healthcare and religion and why we don't have it in this country, what's wrong with us. And
we're talking with Gregory S. Paul, author of the article, The Big Religion Questions Finally Solved, and we'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Ed Mercer from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker, and we are talking about a possible, one of many possible positive side effects of healthcare reform in this country, a welcome lessening of religion. We're talking with Gregory S. Paul, who's a researcher who makes some correlations like this. And we were talking at the end of the last break a little bit about how popular mass culture intrinsically is not really very religious. But I'm interested in one of your strong quotes from one of your magazine articles. You say, "The mere act of running a society in a competent manner causes most of the population to lose interest in church and God." So what do you mean by that?
It's basically that when people are secure and in a prosperous way, and you have to have a high level of prosperity. I mean, just back up. If you're living in a village in India, you're really impoverished, it's not surprising that people like that believe in God. They have low education levels, and they're really living a hard life. They're going to look to the supernatural.
It's a lottery ticket for them.
Yeah, and the question has been, why is the United States the one prosperous nation still relatively religious compared to most other first world nations? And we now understanding, and this is not just me, it's a number of researchers have been showing this, that it's the high level of economic insecurity. And when things get really prosperous, that insecure, where you're just, it's very hard if you're Canadian to lose your middle class status. You really have to almost work at it. And those people are losing interest in the gods. So the gods are not real anyway. By the way, I haven't mentioned this. I have a paper in philosophy and theology that just came out that uses statistical analysis to disprove the existence of a good God, that it can actually be disproven scientifically. And I mention that because if you don't have a real good God in the first place, how can you run a society on that?
Now, your article in Free Inquiry doesn't just point to the fact that there's poverty in this country, but it's the economic inequality and inequity.
It correlates very nicely. You can chart the level of religiosity in the first world nations. It correlates very tightly with income disparity. It does not with per capita income, because that's a different thing, but with inequality and level of poverty. The more larger the poverty cohort, the more religious the country is.
And that is simply because of lack of education. But why are the people who might be wealthy in this country still religious then?
They aren't. There's a good correlation between higher income and education levels with lower religiosity. The wealthy tend to be less religious. That's
so
pretty well documented.
What about you? You were raised religious, I presume. And
I was, but I had my mother's side of the family was Mormon. One of my ancestors, I think, was the bodyguard of Joseph Smith.
Ah.
I was kind of involved in that, but my mother also became an alcoholic and smoked cigarettes like crazy. And it was very complicated, but in my teens, I started getting interested in dinosaurs and evolution, and I became skeptical. And the thing that sealed it for me was when I was around 20, I read Letters from the Earth. I'd heard about it, so I said I'd check that out. And at the end of that,
Twain.
I said, okay, Twain, I get it. There is no God. So that's basically what happened there.
Well, and do you agree with my summation of your thesis that if we could just get universal health care in this country, that would go a long way toward fighting?
That would be a major contribution. There's a big debate in this country, argued by people on the right, for example, O'Reilly and Coulter, and also I think Robert Putnam, Bowling Alone, that person who wrote that book, he's going to come out with a new book saying religion's great. The idea that they have is that you want a nation that's godly, capitalist, where if you're in trouble, you go to faith-based charities for help and that sort of thing. This was called pro-sociality. That's the thesis there. The competing one is the European model, basically, secular, let the government take care of a lot of the big problems. Still, capitalism is important for producing the goods, the computers and the cars and that sort of thing, and housing, but for health care and a bunch of other things also, a safety net, the government. And that system is definitely producing better results. Look at the homicide rates in Europe. They're a fraction of what they are here, Canada too. They have lower abortion rates, lower teen pregnancy rates. We have an incarceration gulag with 2 million people in it. No other country's doing that, not even China. Divorce rates in the United States are high. So
teen pregnancy rates.
Social security suppresses religion. Put in universal health care, which you should do only because, and this is important, the only reason to put in universal health care is because it works. Universal health care costs half as much per person, get longer lifespans, lower juvenile mortality rates. It would save the average American, and I'm not exaggerating, $250,000 over a lifetime if we put in universal health care.
But I could also argue, yes, let's do it because it works and it's cheaper, but let's also do it because it's fair and it's human and we have such an insensitive country.
There's a problem there. The middle class doesn't care about that.
But
they, and I know what you're com- where you're coming
people
from.
People should care about other people.
I know they should. But they
and that's,
won't
but
do
Europe,
it.
Europe has shown more compassion toward its citizens than we show toward our citizens or our illegal citizens, for that matter.
I disagree with you in a sense that the left is making a mistake here. Most Americans do not realize they would save about $2,000 to $3,000 a year, or about $250,000 over the lifespans, if we switch to a true universal health care system. And if they knew that, then you would get the universal health care system that will then help everybody. And that's just a practical thing. I'm for practicality. Do what you need to do to get it done.
So we don't have to appeal to ethics or morality. We can just appeal to our materialistic,
at the same time.
Our materialistic nature.
That's great. But most middle-class Americans don't orient like that. And we do have this bizarre situation where so many American Christians are kind of, you know, mad at everybody else. And they're very, you know, like, what's mine is mine, and don't you dare touch it. And, you know, again, this is not biblical. The Bible is the New Testament is very communistic. And it's a switch that was made about with prosperity Christianity during the 20th century.
Well, we have to end the conversation, but we thank you so much for joining us, Gregory Paul. And do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's www.gspaulscienceofreligion.com, and the evolutionary psychology paper is online, and also a paper I did earlier in the Journal of Religion and Society.
Thank you so much.
Sure enough.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. Go to our website at ffrf.org/radio to hear this show again, archive, and you can sign up for a podcast of Free Thought Radio.
You can ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Get a copy of the October Free Thought Today for free. And who's our guest next week, Dan?
It'll be Donald Johanson, the discoverer of Lucy.
Wow. So tune in next week for more blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.